Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you send us an email at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic, and with me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 Score. So, Cody, tomorrow is the day that we get to hear from Garpax.
Wednesday, 11 a.m., the Advocate Center.
It's actually at the United Center.
At the United Center? I need to, is it really?
Yeah, it's in the press room. You need to read your
emails
closer.
I really do need to read my emails closer. I know it's somewhere over on the west side where the Bulls shoot hoops and stuff like that. I'm sure I would have wandered in the right spot eventually. But yes, Gar Foreman, John Paxson will be holding their season ending, their postmortem, to address all the questions that you Locked On Bulls listeners have for the Bulls specifically. What is the future direction of the organization? I feel like is what's going to be on tap. There's going to be questions like, do you think Dwayne Wade will opt into his $23.8 million player option? What are you going to do with Rajon Rondo's contract? What are you going to do with Nikola Mirotic? Who do you actually think your point guard of the future is? What do you need to add in the draft? I mean, that's just...
Are you going
to
trade Jimmy Butler?
Are you going to trade Jimmy Butler? A lot of really big questions. They will talk around many of them, but I will be interested, again... What they stress, maybe, in the past, Gar has stressed, you know, financial flexibility in 2018 and 19, and sometimes it's hard to put a ton of weight into something he says that's 2 years down the road when you've seen him in the Bulls front office in July 2016 flip-flop so quickly and kind of haphazardly put a roster together. Not even over the course of those first 7-8 days in July, but just some trades later in the season, obviously, too. By the time you had Michael Carter-Williams and Cameron Payne to the mix, like, it was kind of a roster of misfit toys at all moments in time. So you can't put anything they say in stone whatsoever. But again, it is always interesting. They will have their talking points. I know Twitter will make fun of them. I'm sure we'll get our jokes in on that podcast that we have after the post-mortem, but at the same time, there should be things they stress, I think, that might give you a little influence or idea.
I would say one of the things they're definitely going to stress, Cody, is that they went 4-0 against the Cavs this season.
What was their record against the Raptors?
2-1.
3-1?
3-1? No, 2-1. They only played three times.
Oh.
The only time they played in Toronto was the one where Lopez punched Ibaka, but...
He didn't punch him, he swung and missed.
However...
Remember, one game... for taking vicious cuts that don't connect, a ton of games for taking vicious cuts that connect, even though, oh wait, yeah, the intent was the same. That's a really asinine rule in the NBA. Still stand by the fact that Robin Lopez and Ibaka should have been suspended like multiple games.
They were, they were 6-1 against the Cavs and the Raptors.
Okay. That'll be a talking point. What else would be a talking point, Sean?
They feel very good about the future of some of their young players. They really like that Paul Zipser and I'm trying to think who else actually played valuable playoff minutes out of the young guys. Paul Zipser and like Bobby Portis played valuable.
Game one, Bobby.
Valuable playoff minutes. Denzel Valentine valuable playoff minutes. Here's the other one. They control the process with Joffrey LeVert
they
and
do
Chris
control
Felicio
the
because
process.
They're restricted free agents.
The question is, should we trust the process?
Well, if Isaiah Cannon's going to be here, he's a former Sixer. Maybe if he's here, we'll trust the process.
That should be the first question for.
Are you guys going?
Are you going to pick up Isaiah Cannon's contract to guarantee at $1.6 million? Are you going to kind of let that expire?
So we'll find out about all of this tomorrow. I'm sure Bulls fans would love to hear from Gar and Pax, and we're going to tomorrow.
Yes, certainly. On the topic of those two, Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune. Intrepid reporter, very smart, cutting edge on Bulls News reported that there will be, quote, a subtle shift, most likely, in Bulls front office dynamics, specifically the Bulls front office trying to be more collaborative. I think a marketplace of ideas exchanged more freely would probably be a good way to paraphrase what Casey wrote. And specifically, that means more than just Gar Foreman's voice and John Paxson's voice in certain instances being heard, most likely. So that will be on the docket at the postmortem too.
And what Casey reported that would involve is more input from Jim Paxson, who was described in the story as the GM of the Cavaliers who drafted LeBron James, which, like, that's... I mean, if that's true to your convictions. If that's what you want to have on your resume, if that's the leading point on your resume, it's like, okay, you know, great job. You drafted LeBron James. You made the most obvious pick in the world. Cavs weren't exactly very good during those years.
He didn't get much help during those early years. I don't know when. I'd have to think off the top of my head exactly when he left the Cavs.
It was 11. He was in the, it was 11. He was, like, in the organization at some point. Or 11 was when he came to the Bulls.
Yeah, he might have had a reduced role by that point, though.
Not GM anymore.
But what was interesting is Casey also said that John Paxson might take over more of the day-to-day stuff, which might relegate Gar Foreman to more of a scouting role, which really was his strength the whole time anyway.
Yeah, when the Bulls, I mean, look, I know, again, everyone from the outside has the fire Gar, fire Pax, fire Fred. I understand where that frustration comes, but you also have to realize that Gar Foreman has many, he's got a lot of, a good scouting resume to go on. It has not been good the last couple of years.
The problem,
but he did a pretty darn good job through all those years leading up to them, and the way Bulls management views it largely is that two bad first-round draft picks and a bad trade isn't going to change a lot of that, perhaps.
The problem with, like, the with Gar Foreman in this, you know, extended GM role is that GM isn't, is it being a GM isn't just about talent evaluation. You have to also be able to develop relationships with other GMs so they'll want to do trades with you. You have to be able to develop relationships with agents so that they'll want to get their guys to sign with you. And Gar's never really, the thing he's never really been good at, he's had some good moments in terms of talent evaluation, certainly, but he hasn't really been able to, you know, do the, you know, the interpersonal the interpersonal day-to-day stuff of being a GM, where you need somebody who's more of, like, you know, a Daryl Morey, who's more of, like, somebody who will talk to you, or, like, a Neil Olshey, or, like, somebody who's, like, good at schmoozing and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, that could be the most important thing, too, that comes out of Wednesday.
John Paxson is a little bit more of a strong personality than Gar.
Yeah, certainly, and look, Pax has a little bit of a temper at times, too, but he has... He's a brutally honest person, I think, when he talks. And that's important for an organization that hasn't always been great with transparency about everything. And, I mean, even dating back to all the self-inflicted drama with the Derrick Rose era. Is he set to come back yet? Is he really want to come back? Oh, he's killing people in practice out there on the practice floor. The 10th string, 10-day point guard, you know, like...
Mike James.
Derek's killing him, you know, up at the Berto Center. Like, I think he's ready to come back now, and he should have already. Stuff like that. It's just... I mean, there's times when honesty would have helped them a lot more instead of some backhanded sniping, I guess you should say.
Right.
So, I think that's what Pax has the ability to bring, and that will be a big question to ask. What exactly is your day-to-day role going to be? Because... ever since Gar, they both got promotions, I believe it was May 2009,
yeah.
Pax to Executive VP of Basketball Operations, Gar to General Manager, and ever since then, Gar has had a lot of the day-to-day responsibility, obviously, and that worked out really well in the Derrick Rose era then, when he was an MVP and they were drafting pretty well. I mean, they got Jimmy and Nico in 2011, obviously. A couple moves, the Jimmy move, terrific. Nico looked like it was a very bright move there for a while. And, I mean, they generally did a good job identifying talent. James Johnson didn't work out in Chicago, but he's a good basketball player.
So. Tony Snell's been good in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and so it's a lot more than that, though, that you pointed out. The Hoiberg hiring was primarily Gar's idea, leading the charge. He made the decisions at the 2016 trade deadline to not do a whole lot besides, what was it, Drew
Holiday? The Cameron Payne.
No, the 2016 trade deadline, the Drew Holiday, Kirk Heinrich one. I mean, yeah. They didn't trade Al Gasol. That was
Gar.
Very much his decision to do that, as Casey Johnson has reported and I think written about at length on several occasions. Check out his stuff there on that. But yeah, that'll be the big topics. We did want to get to some of your topics as well because we've been long overdue for a mailbag. I think, Sean.
Well, we've just been so busy. It's been a while because we've been so busy with the playoffs, and then we had to decompress after the playoffs. And we had exit interviews, and now tomorrow we've got GarPak's availability. So we're
We had Jay King on some podcasts, and like it was just they're just fire podcasts. They weren't like you know wait around and take questions after those games. Those games created so much, so much not always excitement for the Bulls. So much drama and so many talking points, though.
Right, and now we're in a little bit of a down period, and we want to give you guys the fire content.
So we want you guys to rise up this summer and give us lots of good questions all summer on Locked On Bulls. Adam on Twitter starting it off with, are the Bulls higher on Cameron Payne or Jaren Grant moving forward?
God, that is a depressing question.
You didn't answer it.
I mean, I would hope Jaren Grant. I think he's definitely shown more over the course of the season. I know he wasn't good in the playoffs, but he had his moments this year. Whenever he got consistent minutes, he showed he can shoot well from three. Cameron Payne has not shown anything.
Publicly, it's going to sound like they're higher on Cameron Payne because they've got to do the spin zone. They've got to publicly show support and confidence for him to help him along.
Uh-huh.
Privately, I have the utmost confidence that they're higher on Jaren Grant producing on the basketball court, at least collectively. There are certainly people in the Bulls organization that probably think Cameron Payne can still be a starting caliber NBA point guard and that his ceiling might be higher in Jaren Grant's, but I think most of them have more confidence in Jaren Grant because he's proved that already. And again, I go back to this. Jimmy Butler is still a Chicago Bull. It's more likely than not that Jimmy Butler is going to be a Chicago Bull next year. And Jaren Grant has proved that when he starts alongside Jimmy Butler, while they're not world beaters, they're not on a 55-win pace with this group or anything, he can be productive and a complimentary player to Jimmy Butler on the floor. Did not see a single sign of that with Cameron Payne out there when he was with Jimmy Butler. And that wasn't a lot, but just when Payne was out there, just didn't really seem to be a fit. We have from Pete on Twitter says, realistically, do you think the Bulls keep Jimmy Butler knowing he's openly against the front office? Usually they just fire people that disagree with them.
I would say openly against the front office is a little bit strong.
That's very strong. What Jimmy wants from the front office is clarity. Jimmy has been annoyed by things that have occurred.
He certainly wasn't happy about the Taj trade.
Not happy about the Taj trade. I don't think he was happy getting benched either after that January fiasco with Rondo and Wade and criticizing everyone and teammates.
Right.
But that was a coaching staff decision more than management, from what I gather. So Jimmy would like someone to help reduce the burden he carries every night. He would like better basketball players on his team is the best way to put it.
I think that's a pretty fair way to put it. Every indication that I've gotten, both publicly and privately, is that Jimmy Butler doesn't... It's not like Paul George, really. You can pretty much tell Paul George is done with the Pacers. He wants to be out of Indiana. I think if Jimmy Butler had the... would say, do you want to be in Chicago? I believe that he does want to be in Chicago. I've heard that publicly. I've heard that privately. I have every reason to believe that he wants to be in Chicago. But, you know, the front office does have to do more to build a roster around him so that he doesn't... I mean, because you saw basically what happened in the series against the Celtics, you know, after Rondo went down. As soon as you take Jimmy off the floor, like, he was having to play 44, 46 minutes every night because the team just could not function without him out there. Like, you have to put better players around him so that you're not in a position like that. You have to depend on him so much at both ends of the floor, and then he's playing hurt, and there's all this other stuff.
Yeah, and going back to last July, look, Jimmy recruited Dwayne Wade to Chicago extensively, and that's the leading reason Dwayne Wade came to Chicago besides
his hometown ties there, yeah.
Yeah, and just besides all the falling out in Miami is what created that window and opening. But I think Jimmy also sees, in hindsight, the signing of Rondo and Dwayne Wade in the same free agency and then not addressing team needs elsewhere that could have helped him via better shooters, for example, stuff like that. I think he knows the misfit that this roster was. I think that wasn't on his mind when he was recruiting Dwayne Wade. Like, that wasn't going to be an obstacle to him recruiting Dwayne Wade in any regard. But knowing Rondo, Butler, and Wade were out there, I think Jimmy was smart enough to know that he knew from day one three-point shooting was going to be a problem because he pushed back so hard against it. You know what I mean? He immediately knew what they created wasn't what Hoiberg envisioned for his offense, and that there was going to be there's going to be a hard time getting one ball in the hands of three people who need it in their hands. So he knew all that early on, and that's why he... Remember, didn't he have a famous quote, like, last I checked, you can still win with two-pointer or something like that. There's always Jimmy reference in that, Dwayne sure. reference in that, and yeah. they echo each other's comments. So he would just like better basketball players around him, and he would like the front office, truly believe Jimmy wants the front office to say, we're building around Jimmy Butler, and then make decisions based on building around Jimmy Butler. And I look at this, and you know, I was watching a little of the Rockets-Spurs game. Game one, in which the Rockets just
demolished. That was a bloodbath.
The Spurs. And look, the Rockets are, they have excellent talent on that basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not the big three, though. You know what I mean? All those moves were made with James Harden in mind. And I'm not getting to this, can Jimmy Butler beat James Harden? No, we can't. Can Jimmy run the point like James? Like, let's not do that comparison. But adding Ryan Anderson, why? Because they knew what they were doing with James Harden. Adding Eric Gordon, obviously, he didn't start all the time. Only when I think Beverly was hurt did
right.
he start. But comes off the bench, scoring punch, another three-point shooter. Having Clint Capela turning that role over to him, a bigger role in which he can dive to the hoop and basically be the guy to dunk oops. They made sure they had a really athletic center and gave him more responsibility in that regard because they envisioned him fitting alongside James Harden just perfectly. And it's worked out as great as possible. Like, this Rockets team's so fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Warriors weren't the Warriors, you could make a really good case, if there wasn't a super team in Golden State, that the Rockets could win the NBA title probably. And I think, you know, they can take a Warriors team to six games probably, something like that. That's probably a discussion for another day, another pod. But the Rockets didn't have superstars around Harden, but every move they made fit. And the Bulls, while it's a lot harder to do that calculus with their roster and Jimmy not being as dynamic of an offensive player, obviously, as James Harden, and some of those pieces not being there prior as well, like Capella's already been there a few years. At the same time, they never, ever made hints to try to do that or do those things. You know what I'm saying? So I think that would be a good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, you have to just target, like, good role players that actually fit alongside them. You look at even some of the guys, the secondary guys that Houston has, like, Nene has been good for them. Lou Williams, who they picked up at the deadline, has been good for them. Like, they're just getting guys that fit, like, with the Bulls, whenever they've made, like, even the ancillary moves, because obviously Wade was, like, he fell into their lap. They couldn't pass up the idea of getting Dwayne Wade a Hall of Famer to sell tickets. Like, that wasn't really a basketball move. But, like, some of the smaller moves that they made, like Michael Carter-Williams makes no sense around Jimmy Butler.
Exactly.
Cameron Payne makes no sense around Jimmy Butler.
And maybe it's not even what the Bulls didn't do. They didn't go pursue guys that made sense. Maybe it's just the utterly shocking fit of the moves they did make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, in hindsight, guess who fits theoretically pretty well around Jimmy Butler? Doug McDermott.
And Tony Snell.
Yes. I'm fine with the Snell trade. I think we reached a point where you gave Tom Thibodeau a chance to coach him into something, and he wasn't consistent in Chicago. And you gave Fred Hoiberg a chance. You gave two completely stylistically different coaches in personality, in basketball vision, in everything. You gave him a complete fresh start with the Hoiberg era, and it just wasn't working out. So, while in hindsight, yes, that things got blown out of the water on that trade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that Tony Snell was going... If this Milwaukee Bucks version of Tony Snell would be helpful alongside Jimmy. I just don't think that was happening in Chicago. And that comes back to a question of... I don't know, that seems to be more on the coaching staff, because Jason Kidd's doing a much better job, obviously, in integrating Tony Snell into the Bucks system. and just what they ask him to do. But again, that was it's not just a Fred Hoiberg coaching staff problem because Tibbs didn't get through to Tony Snell either, obviously. So we got some open-ended questions here, though, Sean. Like,
I've got a really important one that we need to get to. This is from Connor via email. Shout out to Connor. That's my dude. He says, what is the reality that Dwayne Wade will convince Chris Paul to join the Bulls? On a scale of 9 to 10, how likely is this to happen? And who will wear number 3 and what number will the other one wear? I think that's a really important question because, you know, you're talking about whether, I'm sure this conversation has been had.
I got the answer to
on the Banana Boat Squad group text.
Yeah.
About who will wear number 3. Why? What's your answer?
Well, what are the chances of Dwayne Wade talking him into that? I would put it as the same as the Bulls' chances to get the Kings' first-round pick if it somehow falls to number 11 via the 12, 13, and 14 teams in the lotto, miraculously, mathematically overcoming us to get 1, 2, and 3 and forcing everyone down. I think that's about 1 in 18,500.
Something like that. Yeah, that's the same odds. That sounds about right.
Chris Paul's not going to be playing in Chicago next year.
I don't think Chris Paul's going to leave the Clippers. He negotiated the over 36 rule into the over 38 rule into the new CBA specifically so he could get a new 5-year max deal with the Clippers. He's not going anywhere.
Yes. Like, he had his vision mapped out there.
But let's talk about the other part of this. Let's say Wade opts out and decides he wants to go play in LA with Chris Paul for and they trade for Melo and try to get a Banana Boat Squad team going. Who wears number 3? I mean, I guess in that case it would be Chris Paul because it's his team that Wade is going to. But, what's the hierarchy?
Wade's got more NBA pedigree.
Wade's got the rings. He's been in the league longer.
He's got more championship equity.
They both have that as part of their nickname, though. CP3, and then Wade is, trying to push 3 as one of his nicknames that he changes every other week. I don't know. It's a good question.
That's true. I don't think that's one we're going to ask Dwayne Wade this summer, to be honest. Hypothetical, if you ever played on the same team as Chris Paul questions. Do you think LeBron and... just do you think some version of the Banana Boat, LeBron, Carmelo, CP3, and Dwayne Wade, do you think 3 of them at any point late in their careers will ever team up together, even if it's for 1 year when they're 39 or 40?
Yeah, I think it'll happen at some point.
You think it will?
I do.
Oh, that would be that would be epic content for us.
It might happen pretty soon, because I think there's a pretty good chance that
Melo
could get traded to the Clippers this summer, especially if Blake leaves, and then they'll have a little bit more financial flexibility to do that. And then, I mean, I don't think it's going to... And I think if Wade...
And then Dwayne Wade opting in and then joining him the next year?
Well, here's the thing. Next year, LeBron's a free agent. LeBron signed a 2-year deal last summer.
Yeah, but LeBron's got a good thing going in Cleveland, and that's called getting to the NBA Finals every single year fairly easily.
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe... I don't know. I mean, I think that some combination of those guys is going to team up again at some point. Whether it's Chris and Melo.
It might have to be in Los Angeles, because if Chris Paul opts into that, five-year deal.
Five-year max, yeah.
Let's be real. Those guys are celebrities, so L.A. is something that appeals to them very much so. But, we expect Dwayne Wade to be back in a Bulls uniform next year, if we had to guess. We will ask our foreman, John Paxson, to guess on that, too. Did want to get out of here on a couple... last few questions. Adam via Twitter asks, was Paul Zipser the second best round 2 pick last year after Malcolm Brogdon of the Bucks?
Yeah, Malcolm Brogdon was definitely the best pick of the second round because, I mean, he might, I don't know if it's going to be him or Saric, but he has a pretty good chance of winning Rookie of the Year. There's actually some pretty good players in the second round, but, I mean, Ivica Zubac from the Lakers, the Croatian kid. Tyler Ulis, I think, is probably the answer to this question.
I like Tyler Ulis. As a basketball player, because I think he's just... I don't know that he's got starting potential, but I just like... I felt like as soon as you put him on your team, he's a rotation player.
But I mean, Patrick McCaw from the Warriors has shown some stuff. Yeah, Paul Zipser's up there, though.
This is coming from the number one fan in the Paul Zipser fan club, at least stateside. I mean, his parents might be his number one fans back in Germany but this is... coming from you, that's quite the concession to say he's not the second best player in the second round, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, he could end up being, but I mean, I think he's one of like a handful of guys from this draft in terms of like the second round or late first round guys that I think is going to really develop into a rotation. But this was not a great draft class.
No, it really wasn't. At that point, we'll wrap it up here. And I know there's a couple extras we got in here. There were some big picture questions we had in the Locked On Bulls Twitter feed, but I think we might wait until after management's press conference, maybe later in the week, early next week, to address some of those when we have slightly better idea. Like, the what would you do this offseason question is kind of a big one, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we don't want to, like, give an answer to that and then find out that they're not, you know, that they're going to do one thing or the other.
Did want to get out on this one, though. Trancy 2007 on Twitter asks, any decent wing shooters available on the free agent market for the Bulls this offseason? So a little bit more focused question there, obviously. The one that comes to my mind is J.J. Redick, unrestricted free agent. Terrific shooter.
And with Redick would be the kind of thing. You have to also, it's worth pointing out, the Bulls did go after Redick once before in summer of 2010 when he was a restricted free agent. They signed into an offer sheet that Orlando ended up
We know the Bulls front office is led by the same leadership. So,
absolutely. So
it's a guy they...
But he's also, like, he's the kind of guy, like assigning Redick, and they would be able to do that probably if they, like, let Nico walk, let MC Doug, like, let all their restricted guys walk. Even if Wade opted and they got Rondo picked back up, they would probably have about... 18 mil. I looked at this the other day. They would have about 18 million in cap space, which would probably be enough to sign.
If Wade and Rondo came back,
They could still open up about.
There'd be some cap holds in there, so it wouldn't be that on
day
one of July free agency, right? But they could renounce.
They could still open up about 18 million in cap space if they wanted to. I'm just not sure I'd pay J.J. Redick 18 million a year at age 32 or whatever he is right now, especially because he's probably going to want a 4-year deal because this is going to be his last big NBA contract.
Yeah.
But that's one guy that I think could be available, and he'd certainly fit. They need shooters, and he's one of the best shooters in the league, so I would not be opposed to that.
The two big wing names that will hit restricted free agency are Otto Porter of the Wizards and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope of the Pistons. Both those guys are expected to command pretty lucrative contracts, right, though, Sean? Like, these are guys that these teams... I can't see the Wizards letting Porter go, given what they've kind of established. Especially for a team that started the year with their two leading candidates in the backcourt, two lead men in Wall and Bradley Beal, going on the record saying they don't really like each other. That season's played out really well. Scott Brooks has done a phenomenal job with that team, and Otto Porter's been a big deal because he's a good defender, he shot really well, and he's proved a lot here. Several years in the NBA...
Yeah, he's going to get maxed out, I think.
The Bulls, that just doesn't add up to have that restricted. It's hard when you're tying up money in other people's restricted free agents when you don't have a ton of cap space yourself.
Right.
Like, it's one thing for the Nets to be $35 million under the cap and, like, just throwing offers at everyone every summer, it seems like.
Yeah.
But for a Bulls team that probably needs to be a little more focused, it's difficult. I mean, other than that, I don't know any wings that, like, jump way off the table. Like, PJ Tucker is more of a 3-4 guy.
He'll be
an unrestricted free agent. Really tough defender. Shot just about 36% on threes last year. This name, Bulls names know this name, Kyle Korver. He'll be unrestricted.
So then the Bulls could sign him and then trade him again for another trade exception that they'd never use?
You're the one that said it, not me. So there you go. Yeah. Prediction.
That's just what happened the last time.
Andre Roberson, another restricted free agent.
Yeah, you want to... I feel like they don't need any more people who can't shoot.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not really... Yeah.
Tim Hardaway Jr., he's restricted. He's been a guy that... What, he started in New York? No, he got drafted by New York on draft night, didn't he?
No, he played for the Knicks.
He played for
the Knicks, and then he got traded to the Hawks. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So he's been on a couple teams, and they'll hit the open or restricted market. So, yeah, I don't know. There's your names out there, but I just, again, like...
Dion Waiters.
Yeah.
I knew
you'd get him.
I'm into that.
I knew you'd throw that name in
I'm
there.
For that.
What about Tony Allen?
I mean,
tough
he
defender,
doesn't shoot.
Can't shoot.
From Chicago, though.
Mm-hmm.
Sell that to the fan base.
Yeah. Tyreke Evans.
That might be like a minimum contract flyer at this point. I don't think Tyreke Evans is really... I don't know what the market is really going to be for him at this point.
Yeah, we're running out of options.
It's not a great free agency class.
We're running out of options here. Tabo Sefolosha.
Yeah, he was bad in the playoffs though this year. Like he's fallen off.
Yeah, he's had some injury problems, obviously. So yeah, we'll ask. Hey, how important is adding another wing defender and 3-point shooter? Because the Bulls, I mean, I think In a perfect world, they need a quality 3-and-D guy to put alongside Jimmy Butler.
Well,
that would help him so much.
In a perfect world, Paul Zipser develops into that guy. But you can't really count on that at
this point. Be better if Paul Zipser had time to develop into that by being the seventh man for the Bulls next year.
Right.
And they got a headliner who was a lot better at that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is all complicated too, as we pointed out, by Dwayne Wade's player option, what the Bulls want to do with Rajon Rondo. So thanks for your questions. As always, hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Or at Locked On Bulls on Facebook too if you want to navigate to the podcast. That way, follow Sean at Hike and myself at Cody Westerlin. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. We welcome all your advertising inquiries anytime, as always. And most of all, give it a follow, subscribe to the podcast, and tell your friends about it.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. We will be back with you guys tomorrow after the Gar and Pax press conference. Thanks for listening.